A famous prayer of George Washington is our topic on this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is a returning guest, Dr. Peter Loback. He and I had the privilege of writing a book together called George Washington's Sacred Fire, which documents beyond a reasonable doubt that George Washington was indeed a Christian, that he was an 18th century Anglican. And there is a letter that he wrote. It's a very famous letter. It's called Circular to the States. In fact, just to find it, all I did was put George Washington, Circular to the States, text, and did a Yahoo search for it. And then I got the text. And so, Peter, why don't you, well, first of all, welcome to the program.
Well, Jerry, it's good to be with you.
Sure. And let's go ahead and set up. Tell us the context of this famous, famous circular to the states. What does that mean anyway? Just a letter to the states?
Well, it's an interesting thought that this is probably Washington's most public document he had ever composed. And when he wrote it, he thought it would probably be his final public writing. He believed he had to really an extraordinary moment to speak to the nation because he was the commanding officer of now the victorious American Army. He was moving into retirement, and he was addressing the country by addressing the governors of the newly independent states. And as he's leaving, he's very much mindful of the fact that having won the war, the question was going to be, could the new states win the peace? He was going to give that into the hands of civilian government. He was going to go to Annapolis to Congress and turn back his commission, which is, again, one of the remarkable aspects of Washington's personality. There was a peaceful transfer of power built into his understanding of how things should be. And so he wanted to give his advice. And so some would say this was his most important writing. And when he gives it to them, then, he is giving sincere, heartfelt beliefs of what was necessary for the country to survive. And he concludes it then with an extraordinary prayer that I think we really want to zero in because of the language that we'll use, that he will use there that describes his Christian commitment and his desire for the American experiment to actually have a close commitment to the life of Jesus Christ.
All right, well, I've got the that part of the speech right here, so I'll tell you what we could do. We could just parse this, frankly, phrase by phrase or portion by portion. Here's what he says. I will now make it my earnest prayer that God would have you in the state over which you preside in his holy protection, that he would incline the hearts of the citizens to cultivate a spirit of subordination and obedience to government. I'll stop right there and just have you comment on that I just said.
Okay, now, first of all, here is a very public prayer. Washington is stepping out in the eyes of the nation, of all the governments of the states, and he speaks personally, and he says, I am a praying man. I have my personal prayer. And when he says this, it's not just a prayer that he offers in some perfunctory way. He describes it as earnest, meaning it's coming out of the sincerity of his being. And it's specifically describing a prayer to God that God himself would work in the states that they preside by, first of all, in his providence, his holy protection. We may remember, or we may not remember, but we've talked about the fact that Washington loved the doctrine of providence. In fact, it was his favorite theological concept that governed all aspects of his life, that God was in control, he had his purpose, and so his prayer is that God would especially protect each of the states that were under the care of the governors, and that as God would do this, he would actually be moving not over the states, if you will, collectively, but he would incline the hearts of the citizens so that God's action would actually be personalized into the citizens' heart. And the specific request is that they would begin to be people that would learn to cultivate, that is, learn to develop, gradually grow in a spirit of subordination, obedience to government. In Christian theology, that is that they would keep the fifth commandment. They would recognize that God has appointed fathers and mothers not just in the family, but also in the church and in the state. and that there would be a state of subordination, not meaning you're inferior, but a sense of if there's a higher officer, that that person would be respected. So Washington's first prayer is that God himself would be the teacher of the citizens of this new nation, and that his work would be in each of the citizens' life so that they would see government not as a burden, but actually as a privilege, being led by people that really wanted to have the best of the nation in heart. So Washington was actually thinking about himself and saying this, not just praying that this would be true for the nation. He was now retiring. He was going to become a private citizen. And in essence, he was saying, Lord, I want to be someone like this. I want you to work in my heart that I will be respecting the authorities that you have now established over me, having given us now the independence as individual states.
Okay,
and its character.
So with George Washington, there was no anarchy, no Antifa, if you will. Okay, let's continue. To entertain a brotherly affection and love for one another, sounds like he's echoing the New Testament there, for their fellow citizens of the United States at large, and particularly for their brethren who have served in the field. So this is interesting to hear a president saying, you know, look, let's love one another.
Okay. Well, he's not even a president now. Remember, he's a general retiring.
Yeah.
But
Commander-in-Chief.
He is clearly looking at the fact that there should be a recognition of the second great commandment in America, that if God is really going to be working in the hearts as he's asking, that God is going to teach them to love their brothers, to love their neighbors, to have a love for one another. This is the new commandment of Jesus, that you love one another as I've loved you. And that would be for fellow citizens, fellow Americans, but particularly realizing, and you would expect this from a military officer, the veteran, the one who has borne the heat of the battle as he comes home, perhaps wounded. We now speak about the visible and invisible wounds of war. Well, there would have been those sorts of things going on then, but there were now going to be all sorts of struggles that would be upon military men coming home after years of being away to farms that had fallen into all sorts of difficulty, families that had not had fathers for a period of time, fathers who are coming home wounded, brothers who are maimed, all these things. He's saying, may God give us the second great commandment, a highly Christian view of ethics, especially looking at fellow citizens, but in particular the veteran.
And finally, that he would most graciously be pleased to dispose us all to do justice, to love mercy, and to demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacific temper of mind. Okay, your comments?
All right. Now, this is probably one of the most direct aspects of where we can see the Christian character of Washington. In this particular passage, for those of his day in particular who knew the Bible, and for many who are Bible readers today, they say, wait, when he says that God would be graciously working in us to dispose us to do justice and to love mercy, the next thing that we'd think of is, and to walk humbly with our God. We know that. Well, that's Micah 6:8.
Right.
So just one of the great texts of the Old Testament that most Bible students would know almost intuitively, having heard it and studied it. Well, he's saying that God's grace is of such, we could call it his common grace, that he's working in the nation, that it would change us so that we would be people of justice. That is, we would live in such a way that we would give to every man his due. In the biblical tradition of the early founding of America, that would be that we'd keep the second table of the Ten Commandments, that we wouldn't steal from each other, we wouldn't lie, we wouldn't commit adultery, we wouldn't kill, we'd respect authority, we'd be grateful for what we have. To love mercy, not just to the veteran, but to the needy, that we would be compassionate. Remember, there was no safety net in government at this time, but that we would be people that would see the needy people and do it. But when it says to do justice and to love mercy, the next line is not to walk humbly with our God, but rather, he says, to demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacific temper of mind. Now, in saying this, he's looking at three qualities. There are words that maybe don't instantly translate into our modern minds, but charity is the classic word for love. that we would be people of love, that love for one another just mentioned, that would be this kind of humility. That is, there would be this due respect for authority, that we would care for the other and loving them, that we'd humble ourselves and not just be narcissistic, self-seeking, demanding our own way. And Pacific temper of mind is that we'd be committed to seeking peace. That we would have that Old Testament theme of shalom, that we would want to be peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers. So then the question that raises then as he's speaking is, well, why does he change the word to do justice, to love mercy, instead of saying and to walk humbly with our God into seeking love, humility, and a peaceful temper of mind? You might say, well, apparently he didn't want to talk about God. Well, that's not the case. Jerry, read the next section and
sure.
See what he's really driving at here.
Which were the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion, and without an humble imitation of whose example in these things, we can never hope to be a happy nation.
My goodness, what an extraordinary conclusion. Basically, what our founding father, the victorious general, is saying to all of the governors and all of their citizens is that if you want to walk humbly with your God, which is what Micah 6:8 is supposed to conclude with, you do it by having the grace of God working in us to change us so that the love and humility and peaceful temper of mind that reflected Jesus Christ, the author of the blessed religion that Americans held at this time, that would be true of us. In other words, the way you walk humbly with God, to use New Testament language, is to imitate Christ. That we need to have Christian love like Christ had. We need to have Christian humility like Christ had. We need to have a commitment to peace like the Prince of Peace had, the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, Washington says this is so important that if we don't have a humble imitation of his example in these very things, now listen to this, we can never hope to be a happy nation. He said that unless these things are part of the American fabric, there is not a hope for this nation to be a place where people want to live. It will become filled with partisanship, hatred, politicization, self-interest, fighting, warfare, conflict, confiscation of something from another because of political power. He said, if we really want to be a happy nation, the rule of Christ must be in our lives. And that is what I am praying for. In saying these words at the conclusion of his most public address, having won, if you will, the war, he is saying the way we're going to win the peace is by America learning to follow Jesus Christ. What a wonderful legacy that he gave to our nation.
And there are people around that say George Washington wasn't a Christian. I mean, just this statement alone, I think, should settle the matter. Even in the context of Micah 6:8, and to walk humbly with your God, in a sense, he's sort of saying, and to walk humbly in imitation of Jesus Christ. I mean, it implies the deity of Christ, but it's such a beautiful statement. I mean, is America a happy nation right now? No. But are we imitating Jesus? Of course not.
Right. By Washington's logic, he would say what contemporary Washington is committed to is actually a formula that will never be a happy nation, because Christ has been banished from everything. And that as a result, he said, well, then expect there to be people who are no longer committed to loving one another, that they're actually going to love themselves. Expect people no longer to be humbling themselves, but rather always trying to step on the back of someone else to get ahead. And if we don't have Christ, don't think you're going to be at peace. Expect that there's going to be unending conflict and all kinds of notorious challenges against someone's leadership. And so Washington is actually giving us here a legacy of saying if we want to really be a successful nation, we need to make sure that religion and its morality are viewed as indispensable supports of our culture. In fact, those are words that come right from Washington in his farewell address. We can actually say where Washington ends the war is basically where he's pointing to when he ends his presidency. He says we have to have this spiritual fabric, or the Republican form of government that we've been given is not going to be a place of happiness, but a place of conflict and turmoil.
Dr. Peter Lilback, again, thanks so much for being with us. ProvidenceForum.org for more information.